Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're continuing our journey through season 11, a journey which is heavily covered by the fact that we're doing this while we're also watching the last season of the show. So it has created, if not melancholy, then an urge to look back on the show as a whole and see how it has fallen as far as it has. And this group of three episodes has some pretty good examples for, you know, the depths to which we are sinking. So let's get started with our first episode, Target Rich. That's right, I actually paid attention when you told me what the episode title was this week.
Okay.
All right.
Another one written by Jim Clementi.
Oh, so that's who's to blame.
Uh-huh, and Glenn Kershaw directed it.
I'm fine with Glenn Kershaw. We've well established our feelings about Glenn Kershaw. He's fine. All right, go.
Okay. When Rossi's daughter, Joy, discovers a pattern of missing female college students from academic institutions across the East Coast, the BAU sets out to connect the pattern to a Virginia pre-med student's recent disappearance. Meanwhile, Morgan receives a cryptic meth warning about the Dirty Dozen, and Reed discloses a piece of unfortunate news to a returning JJ.
Yeah, so first off, great work use of meanwhile there.
Mm-hmm.
Thumbs up emoji. Fantastic job. B, I feel like JJ's back at work too soon.
Yes.
Like, didn't she just have a kid? She's been out a month. Maybe a little
six
more
weeks.
Than a month.
Six weeks.
And she's back on the job already. Mm. That seems crazy to me.
No, don't be too hard on her.
Okay. I'm being too hard on her for saying she shouldn't have taken more time off?
No, because sometimes there are women who are not overly...
They're not into the whole newborn mothering thing?
I don't think with the kind of father...
That Will, we know Will is.
That Junior is.
Yeah. I guess it's fair to assume that he's picking up all of the slack.
Good Lord knows. Yes.
No, that's absolutely true for everything we know about that character. He's got this one.
No, but I think, what I would say is that if she was staying home with her child, I don't think she could cope for much longer. The 6 weeks is because she's coming back, not because she has to come back, but because she wants to.
She can't
be
away from the job. Yeah.
Yeah. She can't be away from the job. And that does the child no good.
If she's sitting at home resenting the kid for keeping her away from the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah,
better. So she's much better off leaving the kid with the parent who wants it.
Well, I'm sure she sort of wants it, but
we know how her job defines her entire life as well.
Yes,
and so her job will generally always be her priority. Which you listening to this now know how it shakes out, but we don't know whether she's going to prioritize her family or her job, because the cliffhanger at the end of the last episode we watched is literally. Is she going to do, like, the thing for her career and stay in D.C. and run the team? Or is she going to do the thing for her family and go and live in
New Orleans?
And New Orleans. So it's kind of huge. It's a big question.
Yeah. So.
And I'm very interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah. We've made our predictions. We won't tell anybody because this is long after.
This is 10 months done. After the show's over. Right. Yeah. I just think it's very interesting that this is the week this is coming up. Mm-hmm. All right. But yes, so
but
the episode.
You're
right. I have to be more understanding that it's like fundamentally, it is not necessarily, and this is 100% true, it is not, you know, biologically determinative that women have to be the primary caregivers for children. And it is ridiculous to suggest that just because she's the child's mother means she has to be the one to stay home in these formative months, right? These crucial early months, and look after the child day to day. It's
If she wants to be at her job, she will do her child more harm than good.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. I agree with that completely. And I was,
now that you
I was,
think about it.
Not that I was basically just trying to be mean to JJ, because it's fun to be mean to JJ. it's not like those. Well, it's not like it's my belief that women should be at home with their children. I'm just like, it's a chance to take a shot at JJ, which I'll always do.
Okay. I'll sort of let it. Well, I didn't let it pass. So
no, you didn't let. You already didn't let it pass. You can't be the bigger person now.
Well, I can be the bigger person and say, well, I'll accept your apology.
Well, no, I mean, but that's, you'll find no evidence of me having opinions other than that anywhere. Because fundamentally, no, I do agree that it's 100% up to her. I just think it's kind of funny that no one else is surprised that she's back that quickly.
No, nobody's surprised that she's back that quickly because her job is her job, right? Yeah. And I mean, it takes her another, this is season 11, it takes her another 4 years before she can finally come down to, okay, frig, I've got a choice to make.
Yeah. Well, no, and finally. The thing is, honestly, if she's constantly not juggling her, like the extremely high pressure of a job, then she'll have to stop and think about all of her PTSD, which she's not willing to do.
Yeah, that's to a large extent that's a good portion of it.
Yeah, she's
plus
gotta
we've all met her mother.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, so I'm not saying I mean I've always said, anyway I don't want to spend too much time, but I've always said fun. You know, if it weren't for my father, our lives would have been a hell of a lot worse. If my dad had been like a normal father and not around all the time.
You'd have had a much worse life.
Life would have been really bleak, I would think.
There you go.
In the end, by the time you get, because you don't notice it when you're a child.
Of course not.
But with my father, like with my father getting laid off periodically, he would take care of the children, and then my mother would work private duty nursing stuff, and
yeah, to pick up the hours necessary.
Well,
to
pick
keep
up
everybody
some
above
money,
board.
Yeah,
well, obviously.
It was, you know, there was nothing there. There was nothing to support them.
And I mean, and that's the interesting thing. Fundamentally, I think it's important to remember that whichever parent is better suited to raising those children day to day is the one who should be doing it. That's obviously the case. And let's face it, given the kind of hours that we have seen her working, it is fair to say that she is not the one most suited to be a day-to-day child giver, caregiver
because,
for children.
No, and because every now and then she feels guilty, but
fundamentally, you're not taking steps to spend more time with your kids. You're working a 70-hour-a-week job because your job is your identity to a certain extent.
You know, you're not there at night. Yes, you phone.
But you're not there.
Yes, and she's going to pump breast milk, so that's good.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, I'm not saying she's a bad mother, except to the extent that, like all of the characters on the show, she is kind of checked out of her children's lives, in a way. No, but then again, all of the parents on the show are checked out of their children's lives.
All of the parents on this show, given the way that they live for their jobs, I mean, the fact that they have children is
completely secondary to their... Yeah. Yeah.
So she probably had children, you know. I mean, you get the never mind. Let's just get off the topic. I mean, I just right.
No, we've assassinated this character enough. Let's move on to the actual episode. The title of the episode comes from an article about rape epidemics of rape on campus. Uh-huh. And specifically an actual rapist who referred to the university's a target-rich environment because there are these drunk women everywhere, and even if you attack them, the school will cover it up. So there will be no police involvement because the school will make sure nobody finds out about it. So very bleak very bleak background to this episode's title. So yes, this is the episode I was hinting at a couple of weeks ago when I talked about, maybe even last week, when I talked about one of the biggest, most ridiculous coincidences in the history of the show. And that is the plot of this episode. Whoa.
It depends completely on coincidence.
The most ludicrous coincidence in the world. Wow. So, yeah, all right. So let's just get into it. Joy comes to see David. She has a traumatic history with a guy on campus, right? Because she was almost assaulted. Well, she was assaulted, but she was almost raped and possibly murdered by a guy when she was in college. And a week later, a girl did disappear. And to this day, did disappear. And she blames herself. And she's been looking for the killer all along. Like, she's obsessed with finding this guy, which, you know what? Good for you, Joy. 100%. That's a great thing to do.
And it means that you could never work for the BAU.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you don't have the ability to forget.
No. They, and we'll come to with that in the next episode. But it's like they are perfectly fine just ignoring cases out of sight, out of mind. But yeah, and this is a perfect example of like someone doing the right thing, continually hunting. But the problem is, and this is where we get the biggest, dumbest coincidence, maybe in the show ever, maybe in the history of fiction, which is a woman disappears.
Yeah.
And she says it's probably the same guy. Now, the guy she's looking for has never worked at this campus before. He has no MO for the kind of woman he kidnaps. So she fundamentally has zero reason to think that this is the same guy. She has no basis.
No. Yeah.
For that, she's just, I'm very upset about this. So every time a woman gets kidnapped from a campus, obviously it triggers my PTSD. And I want to look into it. And I think it could be the same guy. Now, and I can't stress enough, she has zero reason to think it's the same guy. That's what you have to remember.
Throughout this whole episode, she has no reason whatsoever to think this is the same guy.
Yeah. Then it turns out that, no, twist, it wasn't the same guy, but the killer she was looking for had attempted to kidnap this woman and murder this woman, and it was only that a separate kidnapper coincidentally grabbed her 1 second before he could, that it isn't the same guy she was looking for. A guy who could literally have been anywhere in the entire Eastern Seaboard.
Happens to be driving taxi?
Driving a taxi on the campus that this kidnapping happened, and he was about to kidnap that woman if the other guy hadn't come along.
What? I mean, this is one of those episodes that you wish that they... You could actually believe that they had a sense of humor, and this was supposed to be satire.
I know, right?
Because this is as close to satire
as the show has ever come.
I mean, it's so
absurd.
Yeah, completely and totally absurd from beginning to end. You know, and you just go, "Oh Lord!"
What I love is how easy the guy is to catch. Because literally, it's like, okay, well, it's you know, a bougie part of this town, like this super rich college suburb. There are cameras literally everywhere, and all they do is just get a list of all of the cars that were in that area that night. Because the fact is, so they see the woman on the camera walking out of frame, and then the next building, she doesn't walk into frame, and there's an alley between these two buildings. So unless her body is still in that alley, she was obviously put in a car and driven away. So they get a list of the cars who were in the area that night, and one of them is a Chinese food delivery place that this woman often orders Chinese food from, and they're like, well, I guess that's our guy. And that's all it takes. It's easy to solve crimes when you have a list of every single person who was in the area that night.
Yeah.
It's actually not a challenge at all, it would seem.
Yes.
It's so funny,
but
though.
If Joy hadn't made this
bizarre
leap, these two serial killers.
It's true. They might not have ever caught them. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And so it's very good that she did that, but the idea of how they got there is so insane.
Well, no, that's what I said. You know, if you thought they were capable of writing satire.
Oh, absolutely.
This would be a satire.
And it's like, I talk a lot about their absurdly easy to get warrants on this show. And this is one of the easiest to get warrants I've ever seen. Because literally, Joy has audio tape. So this guy says, she says, hey, what about Girl X, the one who was kidnapped from her university, right? And he's like, oh, I remember her. And apparently a judge hearing him say, I remember her, is enough to get a warrant to search his apartment. How? How is that enough to get a warrant to search a man's apartment? Him saying, I remember her, about a dead woman. Not, I'm going to do to you what I did to her, or something overtly sinister. Literally just, oh, I remember her. That's it, apparently? Okay, that's it. That's all it takes.
Yes, and however, it would be...
Yeah?
Well, Joy should have recognized him.
Well, here's a problem with the episode, is Joy feels incredibly guilty because she thinks by not reporting her assault, the guy felt emboldened to go out and murder the next woman the next week, right? Yeah. And then Joe tries to leave her off the hook by saying it definitely wasn't the same guy.
Yeah, that
you
was
have
the
nothing
stupid.
To feel guilty about. And I'm like, what are you basing that on, Joe?
Yeah.
His basis is the guy who attacked you didn't have a plan. He just, you know, put on a ski mask and drag you into the woods to assault you. Whereas the guy we're looking for is a planner. And I'm like, based on what?
Based on what, Joe?
Based on what? All you know about this guy is that he attacks women and then they disappear forever. How do you know the way he was attacking women wasn't putting on a ski mask and dragging them into the woods? What are you basing this belief on, Joe? And he's got nothing. I mean, maybe he's just doing it to make his daughter, like, feel more comfortable and trying to reduce her guilt level. Yeah, he's just lying to her to make her feel less guilty. But it's like, it's a weird thing to say to try and
remember. Okay, but remember, please. Joe doesn't really know how to parent. He only found out a few years ago that he has a daughter.
Last year. He found out last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
Yes.
It feels like forever ago that we were recording those episodes, but it was just last year.
Yeah, okay. Last year, he just found out he had a daughter.
Yeah, that's true.
And,
so you're right.
You know, grandchildren to boot.
And a grandchild, yeah. So you're right. This is all very new to him, so it makes sense that he would not know how to deal with it. But it's like, it's so obviously... There's no reason to believe it isn't the same guy.
No, there's no just as there's no reason to believe it is, there's no reason to believe it isn't.
And yeah,
you know, it could easily be the same guy. Now, as it turns out,
it both is and isn't the same guy.
Yeah. Well, it isn't the same guy for this girl, but it is the same guy who's hanging around.
Yeah.
And what the hell is he hanging around in? Washington for.
Yeah, well, he's just looking for new victims. It's kind of the Eastern Seaboard.
I mean, what a coincidence, as I said.
Oh, yeah, it's the most ludicrous coincidence in the history of the show. Because this guy who's literally been murdering women up and down the Eastern Seaboard, that he would coincidentally be at this place at this time. It's the most absurd coincidence the show has ever offered. And I'm talking about Criminal Minds.
Yeah. As I said... one has to go, okay, guess what?
Yeah. your mind just boggles at the logic of this episode.
This episode I just couldn't take seriously.
You can't.
And it was absolutely hilarious when he's sitting. Well, yeah, but you know, he's hiding something. There's something there. We've got to get him back in, right? So then we get him back in, and then it turns out, I saw the guy.
What I love is it's like he doesn't have enough. I feel like he doesn't have enough empathy. I can immediately tell from the interview that he's jealous of the guy who kidnapped the woman.
How
do you prove that? I didn't see that in his performance. How are you getting that out of that performance? It's so absurd.
Mind reading.
Mind reading, basically.
That's it. Basically, they're mind readers.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, this guy, and then they get the warrant and they arrest him and, you know, problem solved. And hey, again, I want to make it clear, I'm glad that the problem was solved. I'm not against the problem getting solved. Not only that,
but the Virginia pre-med student
was
alive.
Yeah, she was fine.
Yeah, you know.
And then we even get a happy ending where the guy murders his hideously abusive father.
Yeah.
So, you know, problem solved.
Yeah, problem solved. All round, as I said, it's almost impossible to think that you could do a satire on this show.
That was more,
this is a satire.
Oh, this is absolutely a satire, whether they meant it to be or not.
No, they didn't mean it to be.
No, you're right. They didn't. Why am I saying whether? They didn't mean it to be a satire.
But
it just turned out that way because of incompetence. But anyway.
It was hilarious.
It was hilarious. I mean, it's very funny. Especially, like, the weird idea, and I mean, maybe I'm being naive here, and if I am, I actually found it kind of odd, the idea that, like, a guy could be a serial killer and not have any priors of any kind. Like, that's actually very weird. Because they get they put the taxi driver in stir, and they look at his history, and he has zero priors of any kind.
Anywhere
in his history. And I'm like, anywhere up and down like, that seems strange. Especially because it's like, the plot doesn't require him to not have... Like, the plot doesn't require him to not have priors. He could have had priors, but he had an alibi for this crime. And that could just reinforce their idea that they really need to figure out what this guy's up to. Because he also has priors. And they're like, he doesn't fit the profile. He 100% fits the profile. He's a guy who hangs out in the middle of the night on campus stalking young women. Like, this is exactly the profile of who you're looking for.
I'm just sitting there going, but your profile didn't say he would have previous whatevers. Well, yeah, you see, but magical Garcia couldn't find any hidden
sealed
records from when he was a kid. So
yeah, maybe that's it. But
yeah,
it's such a stretch.
Yeah, no, maybe he was like, oh God.
And maybe his family's so rich that they were able to cover it up. Who knows?
Does he look like he has a rich family?
Well, you never know. Like, I mean, you can have a rich family and they cut you off. Right. And they cut you off. And so then you have to take menial jobs like that. I think that could happen, that his rich family covered for him earlier and now he's been cut off.
Or his rich family just he's got a trust fund and he doesn't have a menial job. He's doing this job so he can find prospective victims.
Yeah, so he can stalk women. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
He doesn't take the job. We don't know that he takes the job because he needs to.
Absolutely right.
He may just be taking the job because, well, what the hell?
Good access to victims, yeah.
Yep.
That would actually make perfect sense within this world. So, yeah, not a stellar episode.
And how about Morgan's cryptic warning about the Dirty Dozen?
Seriously, though, that scene where the guy who is... where the guy is poisoned... before he can give them the warning about exactly what the Dirty Dozen is. And by the way, it's this scene that will make Morgan be the focus of Lance Henriksen's wrath later in the season. And I'm like, but Morgan had nothing to do with this guy's death. Like, literally nothing to do with this guy's death.
Yeah, I know.
And that still sticks with me as being exceptionally frustrating. He had nothing to do with it. All right, so let's move on to the second episode.
Yeah, please. Go. Well, not that it's... Anyway.
No, not that it's a huge improvement.
When two Phoenix, Arizona men are abducted and one is found dead, the BAU sets out to track down a killer who deliberately deprives his victims of sleep.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, JJ deals with the stress of raising two children, and Hotch takes desperate measures to protect Garcia.
All right. So, yes, this is the week that they figure out exactly who's behind the, you know, like, the Garcia is the one. Yeah, what the Dirty Dozen means and the fact that they're after her specifically rather than, you know, just some people. I'm not sure why they're going to all this trouble to kill her when she's had no luck finding them, but, you know.
Yeah.
you know, the killers can do what they want. I'm not gonna second guess their priorities. That would be a ridiculous thing to do. But let's, I know, this is the episode that is weirdly determined to keep jerking you around. They're like, let's keep showing people's fantasies of escaping. Like, why? Why do you keep showing me people's fantasies of escaping? Seems kind of like a dickish thing to do to the audience. I mean, after the first one, we know they're not real. But what puzzles me about it is, like, all of the character, like, because it's not, we're not just watching their fantasies. The characters seem to actually think that they're escaping, and they seem continuously surprised every time they wake up, and no, they didn't actually escape. And I found that very strange.
Well, but then they can't be waking up because
they've been kept asleep. They're being
deprived of sleep, and they're not like yeah.
You see what I mean about those whole sequences being confusing, right?
Well, no, they were very they were actually very confusing. And,
yeah, I'm glad it's not just me.
I mean, the whole episode is kind of. I just wasn't all. The whole episode was again one of those ones where you just go,
okay.
Okay, and why are you, and then of course you have to give me, and of course, now here's the thing, that here again you've got, oh no, this was just a fantasy, the man with the tattoo.
We'll get to that in a second. So the guy is picking up people on the road.
But it's like last week's.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a second. So the guy's picking up these people on the road, and he's kidnapping them, and he is,
torturing them.
And he's torturing them. Because he's just found his daughter's dead body, and he's freaked out about it, and he's convinced that he's out there, so he's just going to keep torturing random men until they tell him where his daughter is. Like, it's very tragic, it's very upsetting, but it's like, yeah. You totally understand where the guy's coming from. It's very horrible, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we get this late episode reveal that he fell asleep, like, he took a nap while on the way home from his daughter's thing, and then his daughter got abducted and murdered by a killer. Mm-hmm. And so the characters announce, based on nothing, and I can't stress this enough, based on zero information, they announce, well, he must have just been fantasizing that his daughter was abducted. In fact, she just got out of a car and wandered out of field and fell asleep in a field and froze to death.
Unbelievable. Like I just, I mean,
why would you think that?
I mean, I can't even put this to satire. I can't put this to anything. I can't put this to, except they sat around the writing room and had this really great hook at the end.
Yeah. That the
right. They had this really, really great hook for the end. And then they had to write an episode around the hook
backwards. Except the thing is, you can have them believe that there's a killer out there
with
and still have that hook.
Look, yeah. I do not understand whatsoever why they all sat there
and assumed he was wrong.
Except for Aisha.
Well, yeah, obviously.
You know? She says, yeah, but what if he is?
What if he is still out there? What if he wasn't wrong?
What if he was telling the truth? You know, like, yeah. I don't understand why people didn't believe him in the first place.
Why wouldn't they? Like, there's no reason not to believe him.
And
like,
this can't have been the first abduction.
No, but the first one in the area, because it's highway serial killers, and the whole problem with catching highway serial killers is they're always killing in different states. So, you know, and I mean, the next one he kills in Louisiana.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, there's no national databases for any of these things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that actually does make sense. Yeah. But the fact is, like, yeah, it wouldn't be an easy thing to search for. But at the same time, why would this girl disappeared and got, you know, strangled and left in a field? Or, I mean, I guess the body was so decomposed they couldn't tell exactly what had happened to her, but suffocated and left in a field.
If she was suffocated or strangled, there is still damage on
there might still, yeah. We didn't get any real details about how he killed her, but he killed her and he left her in a field near the rest stop. So he killed her right away. I'm like, he must have been dead asleep if the daughter is screaming as she was being abducted didn't wake her up. But I guess maybe we're expected to believe she got out of the car to go use the washroom and was killed Ben, I think is what we should be expected to believe happened. But the point is, like, there's no reason not to believe this guy, because I'll be honest with you, a girl wandering into a, like, an 8-year-old girl wandering into a field and freezing to death is less likely than a murderer abducting her.
If she was, yes. Yes, because if she was, they were at a rest stop. She'd go into the restaurant. Exactly. She'd go into the restaurant.
Why would she have wandered into a field?
Yeah.
She would if she had to go to the bathroom, she would have gone to the rest stop. There's a bathroom right there, and then she would have come back. Like, there's no reason a child would have, in the middle of the night, wandered off into a field and gotten lost and froze to death.
And the field wasn't all that close to the...
I know. Like, you have to imagine... Yeah. That an 8-year-old girl in the middle of the night with her father asleep in the front seat of the car would be like, you know what? This is going to be a good time to walk 200 meters through long grass. Yeah. No, like, it's just, no.
In freezing cold weather.
That's not how anyone operates, especially not children. Just no one behaves this way. And yet apparently everyone's like, yep, there's definitely not a killer. But there's like, the plot doesn't require them to believe that there's not a killer out there. Whether or not the cops believe there's a killer out there doesn't change anything that happens in the episode. It doesn't change anything about this character's behavior.
No.
He would be, like, whether the cops thought he was responsible for his daughter's death or not doesn't change anything about what he does. So why add this extra level of nonsense?
Yeah.
And that's what bothered me about the episode.
You see, the other thing, though, is that I'm not even sure that, like, when you see him at his daughter's recital.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's flashing back to his daughter's recital.
I remember, yeah.
She doesn't look 8 years old.
Maybe she's six, sorry.
Six, right?
Okay, so I'm mad at judging children's age.
Okay, but okay. Then what gets to be really bizarre is that he goes after a teenage girl at the end of the episode.
What do you mean?
Well, at the end of the episode, you see the guy with the tattoo.
The killer, yes. But I mean, killer. I think the killer just loves murder.
Oh, yeah,
you said he, and we're talking about, it's like, I think, I would suggest, I mean, I could be wrong here. I would suggest that the killer is just down to kill whatever young person he can. Young woman he can. I think he just loves murder, and when you will only kill people who are napping at rest stops on the side of the road, you take what you can get. You know? Like, I'm not gonna judge this guy's taste in victims too harshly. I think that he is a monster, so I think we can let him be a monster with other kinds of victims too. But I mean, not defending him by any means. I don't think anything I said can be interpreted that way. But I don't find it that peculiar that he would be after someone who was slightly different demographically than the person we've already killed. Because let's face it, I mean, killers kill all kinds of people up and down.
Yeah.
Like serial killers. I think specifically pedophiles are the ones who are way more age selective than serial killers are.
That's true.
Yeah, that's as a general rule. Obviously, there are other examples. Yeah. There are exceptions to every rule, I think you would say.
Like the English language.
Exactly. There's always an exception to the rule. And so when I'm watching the episode, my only response is, it's like, there's this hole in the middle of the episode where they don't believe the guy, right? Mm-hmm. Where they just, and it infects the whole rest of the episode in a way that's incredibly frustrating. Because you're like, no, there's no reason for them to have dismissed this guy's claims, especially because it doesn't affect anything about the episode. And you're right, the only reason they did it is so that you can have that scene at the end of the episode where they're like, but really there was still a killer out there and no one's looking for him. But how would the episode ending change really if people were looking for that killer? Mm-hmm. You know, like, it doesn't change the episode dramatically at all. So why not have the more logical episode, which is a guy said his daughter was abducted. People took it seriously, but they don't have any leads there. Like, yeah.
And then they find the body, and then he just flips out.
And then he flips out. Like that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and the real problem is though that he should have been just gone out looking for men with tattoos.
Well, I guess he's so crazy he thinks every man has a tattoo now if they're driving on that stretch of road in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
and then we get to the end. Okay, so how do they catch him? I guess they literally just he keeps killing in the same area of road. Has anything bad happened there? And then they immediately find something bad that happened there. It's like, well, there's your killer.
Yep.
The fact that he kidnapped three people at the exact same place is all the proof we need that this, and I mean, and I will give them this credit. I won't criticize this because that actually makes sense. If a guy keeps coming back to the exact same place to commit murder, there's probably something significant about that place. Like there's, I'm not going to pretend that's not logical. It's completely logical.
Yeah. And you know, and even Garcia looks first for car accidents and then they broaden the search to other things. So
So they follow a completely logical track, and then we get to the ending where Tara murders him. He's not threatening anyone, and she shoots him in the head.
Yeah,
he's like, "No, I've got to find him," and he puts the car in reverse. Well, yeah, there's a bunch of FBI SUVs behind him. He's not going anywhere, Tara. He's not threatening you.
Shoot out his car.
He's not yet. Shoot his tires. You're 1 foot away from the tire of his car. Just shoot out the wheel tires. Like, the fact that she shoots him in the back of the head when he's not a threat to anyone is very troubling.
Well, you saw her reaction after the first time she shot somebody. And as I told you, she's discovering she likes it.
Yeah. And this is, and I think that might have been what I wrote in my review, that it's like, is this character who's like into this murder now?
Well, it was so weird. Yeah. I mean, she didn't, there was no reason to shoot this guy in the head.
Nope.
And kill him. You know, as I said, you could have even shot his arm and that would have stopped
him. You could have shot his arm. You could have shot the tires. You could have just stepped back and he would have crashed into the SUVs that were parked directly behind him. Like there was nowhere for him to go. He did not have a weapon. So, and his victim has been escorted from the premises. So.
Yeah. So.
Why are you shooting this man?
Yeah.
And honestly,
the FBI just cares about saving the people of the United States, the money that it cost to have a trial and then incarcerate somebody for such a long time.
It is a cost-effective resolution to the situation.
It's a cost-effective resolution to the situation.
I mean, you're right, it is, but that's a very bleak way to think of the FBI.
Well, it may not be the real FBI, but
definitely one on the show.
The Criminal Minds FBI?
Yeah, 100%. That's their thing.
Because they always, every time they shoot somebody that they don't need to shoot, there's no blowback.
Nope, none whatsoever.
They get away with it every time.
All right. Yeah. So yeah, that's actually a good point. So let's move on to, and by the way, for a lot of my reviews, I always say, hey, when are they going to get around to catching that pedophile who murders children on the Appalachian Trail? Or, hey, when are they going to get around to catching that Jason who murdered a bunch of people in West Virginia that time? And this is the third one. It's like, when are you going to get around to catching that guy who murders children?
With a tattoo, but they don't believe he exists.
There you go. But it's like, this is
so they're not
three
even
separate people.
Him.
Who not only, well, there's no evidence there's looking for any of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but this one in particular, they even deny his existence.
That's true. This time they even denied his existence, making it even worse.
It's not like anybody went and checked out the body.
No, that's true.
The little girl.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't, they didn't dig her up to get an autopsy.
I'm just like, no. You're right. I prefer my CSIs.
Yeah, where they actually put in the work, damn it. All right, so I guess that's it for that one. So let's move on to the big one.
Internal Affairs.
My God.
Wow. I watched this again and went, oh.
What am I watching? What am I watching?
Yes, and part of me is going, okay, is this when I took a break from watching for a few weeks?
And it's that dumb.
It was just so ridiculous.
Oh, God.
I don't know what anybody was thinking. Well, and yes, and the last two are the part of the sisterhood again.
There you go.
Sharon Lee Watson, and is this Kimberly Ann Harrison was the previous one.
Okay. So, yeah, this is, how shall I put this nicely? This episode is just trash. It's just terrible. Like, it's legitimately a terrible episode of the show, because we open with an absurd scene, right? Just an absurd scene where a woman, right, is getting told off by her boss in her multi-level marketing pyramid scheme thing that she's not recruiting enough people to be in the pyramid scheme. And I'm like, when I first watched the episode, I'm like, okay, so it's a pyramid scheme-themed murderer, I guess? Okay. And then the episode continues, and you're like, no, they're drug dealers. And my mouth just goes agape. Because you're being asked to believe that a drug dealer's plan for being a successful drug dealer would be have as many possible people in the loop who can get caught by the cops and tell on you. Like, that's not how you run a successful drug organization. Like, just bring hundreds of people into the loop.
Yes, and this is a... Yes, and just because they call themselves fake names, nobody's going to know.
No, no one's ever going to catch them. This is at, like, and so we're told, and this is true, within the episode, because basically this whole season, the theme is there's a dark web out there, and this is all based on Silk Road. We talked about this with the assassins in the first episode. There's a dark web out there, and in that dark web, basically people are using the anonymity of the internet to commit crimes. And they're almost impossible to catch because the internet is anonymous, right? It's actually a very good plan for committing crimes to do it entirely over the internet without anyone knowing. And then, so rather than try to figure out a way for the characters to catch these people, they say, well, what if those people who do massive amounts of drug dealing and make giant profits completely online with near 100% security because no one knows who they are or where they operate out of, what if those people also just do face-to-face drug dealing? And then they try to justify it by having, I think, Morgan say, you know, it's like, they want, like, why not do face-to-face drug dealing too to make more money? Yes, to make 50% more money while increasing your risk to yourself an infinite percent. What is happening? And that's the thing. I watch it and I'm like, what is happening this week? It makes zero sense to me. You know, I watch this episode and I'm like, I don't understand anything I don't understand anything the characters are doing. I don't know why on earth they think this is a good idea. And there, you can't justify anything the villains do this week. Or anything the heroes do this week. It's as if it wasn't bad enough that the villain's plan makes no sense to expose themselves. And you want to not talk about, try to imagine how many people are involved, right? So if you're dealing with a normal drug cartel, try to imagine how many levels there are insulating the person who runs the drug cartel from a street dealer. There would be literally, I would imagine, 6 to 7 levels of people between a street dealer and the guy who runs the drug cartel, right? We are asked to believe that this internet-based crime syndicate has, and this is true, 1 level of separation between a street dealer and the head of the National Security Agency. By the way, the villain is the head of the National Security Agency. The head of the entire NSA is also running an online drug cartel.
Through the dark web.
Through the dark web.
And has hired a serial killer.
Oh, God. Oh.
You know?
We'll get on to the actual killer this week in a second. But try to imagine a world in which, like, the head of the entire NSA has 1 level beneath him a woman who is running a drug cartel just for fun. And one, like, directly below her are just people who are handing out drugs on the street.
In a pyramid
scheme. In a pyramid scheme. Like, it's a pyramid scheme with only three levels. And at the top is the head of the NSA. And on level three is just random people doing heroin or meth. Like, it's so absurd. Like, it is so, like, at odds with every single thing everyone knows about how crime works this episode. Like, there's a moment on The Simpsons, right? There's this great on the moment on The Simpsons. It's the episode where, this is me getting into how there are no consequences in the world of Criminal Minds. So, in the episode of The Simpsons where, I don't even remember, Malibu Stacy gets a talking doll and it's incredibly sexist and Lisa wants to stop it. Right, so she does her own doll. She makes her own doll, teaming up with Kathleen Turner to make her own doll. And that doll is, you know, and she convinces the head of the news, Kent Brockman, to do a whole half-hour news story, right? About this.
Yeah.
And then at the very end of the news broadcast, he's like, in other news, in other stories, the president has been arrested for homicide or has been arrested for murder. More on that tomorrow, or turn to another station. Do not turn to another station. And like that, we are now living in a world of Criminal Minds where the head of the NSA has been revealed to be running a drug cartel and employing a serial killer to murder DEA agents. That is the world in which Criminal Minds is set. Wouldn't all faith in government operations disappear the next day? The scope of this is so absurd. Oh, God. Mm. And yeah, and by the way, second worst, absolutely second worst, like, how to handle being undercover in the history of the show. Because the worst, they will never do worse than Free Trade, where the plan was just go try to get abducted by murderers. And if we haven't heard from you in 48 hours, we'll assume you've been abducted by murderers.
And you don't have anyone to talk to.
No, this week, the slightly less bad plan, since they actually did know that the drug cartel existed, the slightly worse plan is just, you know, put a chalk check mark on a wall every 3 days. And if we haven't seen it, we'll assume you've been murdered by the drug cartel and have no way to look into that.
No.
It's almost as bad. Like, these are people who literally, they get a phone call. They're DEA agents who get a phone call saying, come out to the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
For a secret meeting. And they don't get backup or tell anyone that's happening. Do you want to get murdered? Does that make any sense at all to you?
Of course not. It's not how the DEA works. I don't know what this... Well, I mean, if you wanted to... I mean, I would sit here and go... I mean, when you're going through this, and you just go... It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, this show.
Yeah.
The writing, nobody cares. Nobody bothers to figure
think
out...
About anything about how the world works.
Yeah, the world doesn't work. They're now living in an alternate universe. And that universe is where, you know, magic happens all the time. We used to say it was just Penelope who had magic, but everybody else has magic. And people
too.
Really, and all the really smart people that they hire. And after they found the first dead one, they should have been pulling their friggin' agents.
Absolutely. Like, they found a dead and they didn't let, well, the first time and one of them disappeared. One, yeah. And then the second one disappeared, and they're still not pulling their agents. You've been made, you know?
Have you not figured this one out?
How can you not have figured out that you've been made when two of your agents have mysteriously disappeared in the past week?
And one's dead.
And one of them is dead. But no, the third agent, now she's like, oh, who knows? I don't know what's going on. Who's to say what's going on?
I mean,
I'm certainly not going to worry about it.
In the real world, we assume that DEA agent would have been calling her handler to say, I think it's time you call me in.
Oh, absolutely. She got invited to come to a frigging meeting with, she was being told she was going to meet the next person up in the cartel.
Yeah.
And she didn't think that was worth mentioning to the DEA? By the way, remember the guy we're looking for? I just got a meeting with him. Maybe let's follow me to that meeting? And my favorite part, though. Oh, well, no, everything about this episode is my favorite part. It's all, it's all equally terrible. Like, everything that happens this week. But my kind of favorite part, and tell me how you feel about this, is the idea that this, quote-unquote, like, this cartel, which theoretically, you know, they exist on the dark web to have 100% operational security, no one can catch them. And the woman, Ben Franklin, who is doing the deals, literally uses her own personal cell phone to do all this crime drug dealing. So they're able to say, okay, well, let's look at the records of the phone records of the murdered DEA agents. Oh, they were calling this random housewife on her home cell phone. And is there a worse moment in this show that it's like, I'm not going to admit I'm involved in crime. We'll tell your husband if you don't. Oh, okay. Well, then absolutely I'll tell you I'm involved in crime. Spoiler alert, your husband's going to find out if you confess.
Because you're going to get arrested.
Do you think that they're going to let... Oh, you've confessed to conspiring to murder 3 DEA agents. Do you think because you admitted that you conspired to convert 3D agents, you're going to get away with it? I'm sorry to laugh this much, but...
You know, well...
It's one of the dumbest episodes they've ever had. Like, ever.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, with Target Rich, you could say, okay.
It's the stupidest coincidence
satire.
In the world.
Yeah.
But and it's kind of satire, and if you let them have the coincidence, which you absolutely shouldn't, but if you let them have the coincidence, then at least you can say, well, once we give them that coincidence, they solve it in a completely normal thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and yes, there can be guys who are obsessed with women who kidnap them. And there are guys who serial kill on college campuses. Like, that's all factual. Whereas this, every single part of the episode makes zero sense.
Zero sense.
There's not one piece of this episode that isn't complete nonsense. Down to the third in command at the NSA, having someone get into his car and shoot him in the head.
Yeah.
In the middle of the NSA parking lot.
Yeah, and then the NSA guy says, well, yeah, that was his confession.
Yeah, like, what?
Yeah, what?
He had called me up and said we wanted to talk. Well, yeah, well, obviously he wanted to confess, but then he shot himself and said, no?
Why would you think that?
Why on earth would you think that?
We all know Hotch didn't buy it.
Well, no, of course Hotch didn't buy it for a second. He's a professional, but... Why would any
the only but why would anybody like
why would anyone
no
accept
I mean
it for
it's just
yeah.
it's just it was just so absurd.
It's absurd. Every part of this episode is
it would have been
ridiculous, absurd, unintentionally comedic.
It's yes, down to the soccer mom.
Oh, but you see why I would put this and her law. And again, I find it so insane. The idea that it's like, I don't want my husband to find out that I'm the head of a drug cartel. So I'll tell you about the drug. Yeah. If you keep your mouth shut and tell your husband, you might get away with it.
Yeah.
But if you confess, you both don't get away with it and your husband finds out. So what are you doing, woman?
You know, because he would have argued that she didn't know that they were being killed.
Her husband could have come, like...
Oh, no, no. That... I mean, in the real world...
Yeah, no, in the real world, there's no way she confesses.
Well, no, and the thing is that she find. I mean, the very fact that she doesn't know what a burner phone is for.
I know, she's the head of a
cartel. Was the height of
she's the head idiocy. Of a drug cartel, and she's never heard of a burner phone. What world is this show set in?
Yeah, well, no, they wanted to make it. They wanted her to be a dumb soccer mom.
I know.
Well, like, no, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't work.
How did the head of the NSA meet this woman?
Yeah, you know, I mean,
to put her in charge of this
friggin' El Paso.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
I know it's crazy. You know, the funny part is, I think it was the AV Club. They randomly, after, you know, 10 years of it being on the air, they randomly said, oh, let's randomly watch one episode of Criminal Minds and review it. Just out of completely random, let's just pick whatever the latest episode was. And it was this episode.
No, really?
Yes! Now, in their defense, well, not defense, but right, I will say about this episode, it's a terrible episode. I'm not saying it's not is not a terrible episode, but it is unfair to judge the show Criminal Minds by this episode.
No, you can't. Well, actually, and it's funny, it wasn't just the AV Club. There was some other place that somebody also did that sort of thing and watched, like, one episode.
And one episode to try and figure it out. And it's like, you totally, it's not fair to do that, because that's just not
you
the kind of show
you
this
can't.
Is.
It's not that kind of a show. And particularly,
it's a week to week, yeah.
And particularly when you get the, you at least have to watch a season.
Oh, totally, yes, if you want to be able to fairly comment on it.
Well, the point is what we have been making with our podcast is that you need to watch one season from 1 to 5, preferably maybe 3, 2 or 3 or something.
Probably 3,
and then you pick season 11.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be unfair to watch one of the Mandy Patinkin seasons and then, like, go, because, you know, he didn't stay on the show. But it's like, then you're right, then jump to season 11. And see how far it's fallen. But just the idea that, like, this, imagine the person for whom this is the only episode of Criminal Minds they've ever watched. Oh, those poor people.
I know, right?
Oh, those poor, poor people. But yes, it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Even for Criminal Minds, this was a very questionable episode. But dear God, the places it goes.
And we haven't even talked about the whole disgusting face thing.
Oh, God, yeah, it's like
and
the killer
barn
who cuts off
and everything else. Oh, give me a break! I was so bored.
I know.
I watched three in a war. I watched these three episodes in one after another, right, just like you did, and I just, by the time I got to this one, I'm just going, dear.
Give me a break.
Yeah, give me a break.
That's the only reasonable response.
I thought I would forget. That's why we're doing it today. It's been a whole week since I watched them. But
really?
I didn't forget. I can remember them, and I don't want to. They're
so
just
mean.
No, because it's just...
No, you're right. I'm not criticizing you, but it's so mean.
No, and I mean, as I said, the only person that comes out like a human being is Hodge.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, like, watching how far it's fallen in season 15 and the ridiculousness of the idea that you could make Emily Prentice head of the FBI. And then you sit back and you watch Thomas Gibson, like, be completely professional and, again, gravitas with the dumbest premise of an episode he's ever been asked to do.
Yeah.
Like, to go and do, you know, 3 days of the Condor style stuff at the NSA, and still him acting with, like, bringing total believability to his performance in this ludicrous situation. And you're like, we joked earlier about how could the show survive the loss of Thomas Gibson, and I don't think the show did survive the loss of Thomas Gibson. I think, you know, that we have checked the receipts. The show didn't survive the loss of Thomas Gibson. It just took 4 years for the bullet to hit, you know? I mean, I'm not saying the show would have run forever if he had been on there, but I honestly, on some level, I feel like sex crimes can run as long as Mariska Hargitay wants to keep doing it.
Yeah, a As long as
but
she, yeah.
I don't know.
The central core of that show.
Oh, and it always has been.
Hodge was.
Exactly. And, but if she ever quits, I don't know how they keep doing that show.
Well, no, they don't.
No,
I think when she decides she doesn't want to do it anymore, I think that it's over.
And fundamentally, I don't even think the producers understood it. Fundamentally, Hotch was the core of this show, too.
Well, just remember that the showrunner
and
executive producer, whatever you want to call her,
wanted him gone.
I am absolutely convinced, because it's coming up now. We can sort of start talking about it. But I was just listening to the episode that's going to go up on next Thursday.
Right, the season 7 episode.
Yeah, and season 7. And we were talking about writers and things like that. And I had suddenly, when I'm listening to our conversation, I'm going, yeah, and one has to remember that it is that Hotch is the one who got into the, it's a writer, right?
Yeah.
Got him.
He got into a, he had to fight with a writer, and that's
and
why he got fired from the show.
And they say he had anger management problems before and had been sent off for, 6 week
counseling
thing. Or anger management group thing. And I'm beginning to wonder more and more whether or not it was just that he constantly had these problems with the writers and with the writing. And
And it's like, it's entirely possible that it's like, I wouldn't go give to know what they were arguing about when he tripped that guy. Mm-hmm. What were they fighting about? Because it's like, the work Thomas Gibson puts in, and again, I don't want to be the kind of person, and I'm not going to be the kind of person who defends men who do horrible things because they're geniuses. That whole culture of defending Woody Allen, I'm not going to get into that.
No.
Absolutely
not. Defense.
This is not a defense, but I am very curious to know what the fight was about. Because it's like, you see the care he puts into this character. Right. And he has always acted his heart out on the show, no matter how bad the material was. And you honestly want to know, was he confronting someone about how terrible these scripts are?
Before,
you know?
Yeah, because before, we do know it was screaming. Well, we can figure it out because we'll have to, when we get to season 12, we'll do a little bit more, but it's the Virgil Williams thing, right?
Yeah. So where was that? Yeah, like
Well, all you have to do is which episodes did he write? So it had to be something in those episodes.
Yeah.
Although things would have gotten changed. Whatever.
Oh, no, they would have gotten changed because it was one Virgil Williams wrote and it's one he was going to direct because that's why they were fighting.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'd have to dig in and find that out because I would be very interested to find out like what led to that? You know, what was the fight about? Anyway. But yeah, this episode, because so much, and that's the crazy part, it's like, so much of it is the most ludicrous, stupid, embarrassing stuff you've ever had on the show. But he is such a consummate professional. He's such a consummate professional that it's still watchable during his scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess as we go on, we'll probably notice it more and more. But it was pretty clear.
I think so.
You know, when that the show takes a real,
nosedive.
It took a nosedive. It started, but it took longer for the nosedive to hit after Edward Bernardo left.
Left. We know it's been in a down, been trending downward since the departure of Ed Bernardo.
Yeah.
But after they lose Thomas Gibson, it's just headed straight for the bottom.
Yeah.
Like it's a death spiral.
Here's the cliff.
Yeah.
Here's the cliff.
They have just stepped off the cliff at that point.
Yeah.
And they're heading straight for the bottom. Mm-hmm. Oh, anyway, so that is our conversation about what may go down in history. I mean, this is going to be a strong debate we're going to have later. But what may go down in history is the dumbest episode of Criminal Minds.
Well, this is, and this week will go down as one of the weeks with the three dumbest episodes.
Oh, yeah. No.
I mean, we've had weeks with boring episodes or weeks where, you know, there's the odd, really bad episode and stuff. But these three episodes, there was just, it didn't, none of them made any sense. Not really.
And the weird part is, Awake, if they hadn't had that moronic subplot about no one believing that his daughter was grabbed and murdered, and
nobody at the BAU believing it.
Yeah, no, none of the local ops and nobody at the BAU. If they hadn't done that, part of the, that is a mediocre and perfectly acceptable episode.
Yeah.
But they at the last minute are like, no, this is the dumbest episode. And the crazy part is, right?
Because they have to have their twist.
But the weird part is, you remember how I joke about how Tara Lewis loves murdering people?
Mm-hmm.
But the weird part is, they're supposed to be frigging geniuses at talking these people down. Why not say to him, that's not the guy, but we have a pretty good idea who he is, and we need your help to catch him.
Yeah, that's all.
That's all you have to say to get him out of that trap.
Yeah. We need to tell us what the tattoo looked like.
Yes, we have a lead. We need you to like tell us what the tattoo looked like, because we think we know who the guy is. There. You've just got him to step out of that car. But that's not what they do. They try to say nothing happened, and it gets him angry enough to put the car in reverse, and Tara executes.
And as I'm going, I'm going, why did they do that? Why?
Yeah. There's no good reason.
There was absolutely no good reason for it.
Zero.
And so, I was not happy with that episode.
No, it's a frustrating episode. And the thing is,
was frustrating, and then I had to watch Internal Affairs.
Well, no, and that's the weird part. It's like, you've got two of the dumbest, most preposterous episodes the show has ever done. And then between them, you have an episode that could have been fine, except for this key thing. They want to do the horror ending, a horror movie ending of the killer still being out there. And it makes everyone look terrible at their job and ruins the episode.
Yeah.
So yeah, a really questionable hour. All right. So what have we got next week? What's the homework? What's the reading if people want to do it?
10, 11, and 12. So 10 is
hit me.
Future perfect.
I have no idea what that is. What is that?
The BAU returns to Florida after two people are found dead in St. Augustine and find themselves profiling a killer who performs gruesome medical experiments on his victims in attempt to find a cure for a mysterious disease.
The mysterious disease is aging, and it's not a good episode, but let's keep going. All right.
You just spoiled it for anybody. Sorry. The next one is Entropy.
These titles mean nothing to me. Like, I'm sure I'll remember the episode right away, but what is this one?
As the BAU carries out an elaborate plan to take down the Hitman Network, Reed finds himself forced to engage in a high-stake cat
and mouse game. It's the Aubrey Plaza episode. Yeah, that title means nothing to me. It's the Aubrey Plaza episode. Okay.
And then Drive.
Which one is Drive?
When three Boston, Massachusetts women are tortured, decapitated, and dumped in various public locations, the BAU suspects the killings are connected to a local rideshare service the victims used.
Oh, right. Yes. The guy who's using a guillotine. Yes. Okay. All right. Guillotine Man. Right. Okay. Yeah. None of those episodes really, like, I remember all the episodes perfectly. Don't get me wrong. It's just the titles didn't jump out at me at all. The way Internal Affairs, well, you know exactly which terrible episode you're dealing with. But those titles are so generic. Nothing about the episode where they take down the Assassins organization in any way associates with the name Entropy. Like, that's just, no, that's nothing. All right. So I guess that's that. We will see you back here on... We'll see you back here next Thursday for that episode. I hope you'll watch the episodes and join us then, because it should be a lot of fun. Until then, though, if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you have any suggestions for profiling-related fiction you think we should check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're listening to this on some sort of a podcast client, be sure to give the show a rating, because that's how the computer decides whether or not to show it to other people. We'll see you back here for more next week. But until then, au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks
Podcasting Network.